Okay, we're going to carry on a discussion of Mashiach, who, when, how, and why. That'll be today's discussion we'll be looking at. Turn to page 32. We'll start with a Ramban. We're going to go back in history to get a context to see what Mashiach is about. Could you close the door behind you, please? Thank you. We'll start with the Ramban, top of page 32. Did we do this last class as Ramban?
No,
it's a small shtickle, a small piece. Okay, it's a small piece. There's going to be a great change after Mashiach has arrived. Now, we're going to make a differentiation, as I said before. We're going to differentiate between the days preceding and leading up to Mashiach and when Mashiach actually arrives. There is a build-up. That is going to build up as the days of the week build up to Shabbat. So too there is going to be a build up to the coming of Mashiach, the sources tell us. Different opinions in the Gemara, what that build up is going to be like. Some pleasant and some unpleasant. But once Mashiach comes, let's have a look what the Rambam says. This is the Rambam in Devarim. And he says, B'yemei Mashiach, lo yiyeh ba'adam chafetz. There will be no desires for evil. Aval yaseh b'tivo ha'maseh ro'i. Person is just going to do the right stuff. U'lefikach ein b'hem lo schud v'lo chova. There is going to be no merit and no demerit for your actions. Ki ha'schud v'chova t'loyim b'chavitz. Because it all comes from desire. There is going to be a lessening of desire. That is where we are getting to. Why do I mention that right now? I'm kind of jumping right to the end. That's the goal line. That's what we're looking for. Okay? And in order to get to that point where, as the Shema Shmuel, the next source says, once the Messianic era begins with Mashiach present, there will be less reward for our actions, per se, he says, because there will be a lessening of the Yetzer Hara. How that happens, I am not sure. But that's what it says. So it's not a time of receiving, it's not a time of earning reward, but a time of receiving reward. Yeah.
That's what the Rambam says.
That's the Ramban on top, and then the Shema Shmuel underneath it. Page 32. You have your book on you?
Then
you need to share with someone. Okay. That's Shmuel Bornstein is a Shema Shmuel. Note 3 on page 32. Okay. So we have a lot to do today, so I just want to get through as much as possible. So let's go back to the Ramchal. So let's go back to, that's the end. Let's go back to the beginning, because as we said already, all of Jewish history, actually world history, is one big circle. It starts as a point, we go around, and we end up, hopefully, at the same point. Where does world history begin? Gan Eden, with Adam and Chava in the garden. They make a mistake. They choose to eat from the Eitz Hadas. They are then exiled, and the exiles keep going until we end up at Yemos HaMashiach. That is the pattern we are looking at today. And that's what the Rambam says. When Adam Rishon was first created, he had two parts, guf and neshama, body and soul. He should have chosen good. He would have had absolute perfection. However, he did not. Page 33. We've seen that Ramchal inside already. Rav Dessler then explains why that's important. He says, before his sin, koidem cheto, when he was in Gan Eden, there was a certain level of awareness, of ruchniyut, he says, hametziyut that existed that time, and there was a physicality, but you could see the difference. You could see the difference. Okay? And the physical served the spiritual, he says. Yeah? Hu kibel et mezono v'kol chiyuto miyolam ruchni. He was literally living on spirituality in Gan Eden. Okay, and he even brings down an Avos de Rabbi Natan that says, even the angels would roast meat and pour wine for him. It's like the spiritual world served Adam Arishon, whatever that means. After the sin, there was a Yerida. The Yetzara entered into Adam HaRishon, went inside, and then there was a blockage. There was a hiddenness. Says the Ramchal, bottom of page 33. Therefore, what is our hishtadlut? What is our effort? Not as individuals, but as a nation, and as a world, actually, is to earn perfection, shleimut, to actually bring ourselves back to Gan Eden, but the world itself will take on the status of Gan Eden. Okay? We'll reach back to that level. We're going back to the world pre-hachet, before the sin of Adam HaRishon. And just like things were supported by spirituality, we shall see. We're going to see this in more detail later on. And just as the world was more spiritual nature at that point, so too that's what we're going to get to. Just as it was clear what was the Yetzirah was not so powerful back then, so too we're going to get to that point again. So that's the full circle we're going to be tracing, which starts with Adam HaRishon and ends with Mashiach. So those are the big, big bookends we are looking at. Yes. Very, very good. That's a very good question. If there's no Yetzer or compelled him, he still had a choice and he chose. He still chose it. Why did he choose to actually do that when there's no Yetzer? And that is a whole discussion called what we call like the bread of shame. Adam HaRishon realized that in order to achieve perfection, you couldn't just get it given as a gift. You have to earn it. Had to earn it. That's a whole different discussion. He had to earn it. Therefore, he chose to do wrong so that he could earn the goodness of Gan Eden. And really, all of world history is the earning of Gan Eden, rather than getting it as a gift, so that it wouldn't just be a free gift. Yes, Priya?
If we're going back to a world that our desire is lessened, wouldn't that be negative in terms of our relationship with Hashem?
So it seems negative. It does seem as though going back to the world is negative. However, it's really a positive thing, because you're kind of like giving up your free will, and we're getting back to Gan Eden, where it was a much more spiritual and direct relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu without the Yetzirah coming in between. So it's hard for us to even imagine, because we live in this world of physicality where we're constantly struggling. As I said, it's almost like trying to envision like a different color. It's almost alien to us. I can't even imagine such a world where the Yetzirah is diminished in that way. However, that is what we're told the Messianic era will comprise of. Okay? And that's what the Ramchal says, chapter 1, verse 3 and 8, bottom page 33. So a person has to bring themselves back to the state in which they existed before the sin, and then he can raise himself from a state of his level of perfection to shleimut. Okay? And that is what the sources over here pretty much are saying. Okay. So what exactly happened? So let's turn to the board, where I've given you the various phases that Jewish history has taken. And we're going to divide it into four parts. And we're going to begin it from the beginning of the Jewish people, which is really the from Avraham Avinu, but really from when the Jewish people became an Am, which is through Yaakov. Okay, through Yaakov. Now, if you remember that Yaakov ran away from his twin evil brother, who was Esav. And if you remember, he had to leave the land of Israel. And on the way out, he stood at a certain place and he slept. Rashi says, actually, for the first time, because he'd been studying after that point in the yeshiva of Shem and Ava, and he dreamt. And he dreamt of a ladder. And on this ladder were many, many rungs, but there were four angels, according to the sages. And these four angels represent four exiles that Yaakov's descendants, remember Yaakov had this dream because Avraham Avinu couldn't have had this dream because he had Yishmael, and Yishmael wasn't going to go through this. And Yitzchak couldn't have this dream because Yitzchak had an Esav, and Esav is going to go through this. Remember, Yaakov is the one who becomes Yisrael, and that's really when the Jewish people get going as an as a nation, because remember that Yaakov has the 12 sons and they become the Shvatim, the tribes. Okay? So that's where we are. So these four angels going up these different ladders, there's a whole different discussion, by the way, not for now, of the amount of rungs that each angel went through, what corresponds to the amount of years that each one of these exiles is going to happen. Okay, are we clear? So we've jumped to Yaakov, that's the beginning of Jewish history as we're going to understand it. And we have the four exiles. So remember, the descendants of Yaakov go into Eretz Yisrael under Yoshua. And then, after a while, we have the destruction of the first temple. Okay? The temple that was built by Shlomo HaMelech. And that is the galut. So this is the Arba Galiot, the four exiles. And the first is Babel. And that was Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, in the Jewish year 3338, destroys the first temple. And that is known as the Babylonian exile. Okay? And that is the first of the four angels that Yaakov saw. Okay? So that's the galus of Babel. That is referred to as the Nafshi exile. There's also animals corresponding to each one of these, and we'll see more as well. This is called the Nafshi because Nebuchadnezzar wanted to get the Nefesh of the Jewish people. He wanted us to bow down to him, see him as an idol, see him as a god. So the soul was afflicted at this time. Okay. This exile ended up being kicked out. This exile, interesting, happens also in Israel, by the way. The Jews were in Israel. Okay, come back to that in a second. Then we go back, if you remember, we go and we're pushed into Paras, into Persia. Okay, so now we're in between the first and second temple. In between the first and second temple. Yeah, and that is the Persian exile. That's when all the Jews were pushed into Great Neck. And Paras or Madai, the Median. Okay, these are the two places. Majority of the Jewish people, however, were in Persia, and that's the whole Purim story. How long does the Purim story last? Those people on my course last year, you better know the answer to this one. How long does the Purim exile last? So the prophet tells us it was 70 years. 70 years the Jewish people were in, and we were told beforehand. Now the whole question over there is when that 70 years begins and ends. That was the question. And different people have different theories. Ahasuerus has his theory. Baal Shatta had his theory. Each one of them, by the way, threw a big celebration at the end of what they worked out to be the 70 years, the end of the 70 years. So everyone had their own calculations how long that would be. Now, they wanted to kill us physically. Remember that? Haman, Boo, wanted to kill us physically. So that was considered the Gufani, right? The Guf wanted to destroy the Guf. So this was considered the physical exile of the Guf, which is, by the way, why we celebrate on Purim by eating and drinking. Remember, the celebration always corresponds to what the challenge that we overcame actually was. Okay, not as my wife always says, every Jewish holiday is the same. They come to attack us, we win, let's eat. Okay, that is partially true, by the way, but more so by Persia. So that was 70 years, okay, and that eventually ended. And the Jewish people, most of the Jewish people, returned to the land of Israel to build the second temple. Okay.
Why is there a yud before each word?
Oh, that's not a yud. I'm sorry. That's quote marks, like quotation marks. I'll see you why in a second. I'll show you why in a second. We're going to use these four letters to do something else in a second. During the second temple, the Greeks... This is just a quick summary, but just so we get the four exile parts. If you want to know more about these holidays, I do a course on Jewish holidays here. So we have Yavan. Yavan is the Greece. And here, the Greek Empire entered into Israel, and that's the Hanukkah story. Okay, and that's a long time. That's 180 years, according to some of the commentators. And interestingly, this is a galut. This is an exile. But where does this take place? In Israel. Well, doesn't make sense. Isn't galut that we're kicked out of Israel? Well, what's the answer to that one?
The temple was destroyed.
No, the temple wasn't destroyed. The Romans are going to come and destroy the temple over here 200 years later. Right? The Romans who took over from the Greeks, okay, philosophically and maybe even like physically, yeah, they're going to destroy the temple. Here the temple existed and we're in Israel, yet this is considered one of the four exiles. And even this took place in Israel as well, yeah. Yeah. Right. So we were exiled from the Shekhinah. We were exiled from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is a physical exile. And the physical exile, that means the Jews are kicked out, is a physical manifestation of a spiritual exile. If it gets too cold, let me know. Yeah. Of a spiritual. So over here, physically, we were in the land of Israel. And we had a temple. And we were serving. And the Kohanim were doing the Avodah. Yet this was also an exile. Okay, because we were exiled from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shekhinah as well, because the Greeks had taken over. That's the Hanukkah story. And finally, we have the final exile, so what was this, by the way? So the Greek, what did the Greek want to do? They didn't want to kill us physically. I mean, there were some wars later on, but they wanted to to assimilate, to inform us, right? To maskil us, right? To give us sechel. So this is called the sichli. This is called the sichli, right? The intellectual. They wanted to educate us, to inform us. We're like, we like your Judaism, but we also have other forms of knowledge as well. So that's what they were trying to achieve. That's the third exile. And finally, we have the exile of Edom. Edom is Rome. And this is considered to be a collection of all three. Now, let's go back to Yaakov. Let's go back to Yaakov. Because Yaakov had the fourth angel. And the Midrash tells us that the fourth angel just kept going and going and going. And he didn't see the end of it. There was no end time. He couldn't see the end of it. It just seemed like a very long one. And this exile is the one we are presently in, possibly. We're going to look at another opinion, which I found, which is pretty wild. But according to most opinions, we are in this one right now. And that is the fourth and final exile, and we're at the end of it. And this exile is a couple of thousand years old already. Okay? So that's Hakol. We end up with four letters. Nun, Gimel, Shin, Hey. Just for interest. And recognize those letters? Nun, Gimel, Shin, Hey. Dreidel, very good. Neis Gadol Hayasham. Interesting, right? But those four, they also, I believe, add up to a number. What number do they add up to? Nun is? No, Nun is 50. Let's do it slowly. Nun is 50. Gimel is 3. Shin is 300. Hey is 5. That comes to 358, which, interestingly enough, comes to the same gematria numerical value as Mashiach. Okay, so it seems as though everything seems to be leading to us to that point that we're going to be working on and try to figure out. So that are the four stages. I will mention, I didn't bring it down, but I must mention this, because there's an incredible piece, which I learned a number of years ago, about something called the fifth exile. Now, you're not going to hear people speak about this, because it's a, I wouldn't say an obscure piece, but it's quite an interesting one. And Rav Chaim Vital, and then his teacher, the Arizal, says that the end of days, there's going to be a fifth exile. And he's writing a few hundred years ago when he says this, by the way. A fifth exile, about 500 years, actually. A fifth exile, which you're not going to hear people speak about. They're just telling you. This is like, we're now outside the circle, if you will. And he writes as a commentary on Tehillim. And he says this exile is called the exile of Adam, of man. And he says it's a reference to the Para-Adam. Who is referred to as the Para-Adam? Anyone know in the Torah? Yishmael. Yishmael. So we, according to him, at the end of days, he says, you'll see that this is going to be the final exile, which will be a short amount of time, God willing, and that will be the exile of the descendants of Yishmael. Who are the descendants of Yishmael? So we presently, we usually understand it to be the Arab Muslim nations that are going to subjugate us right at the end of days, and that will be the final exile before the coming of Mashiach. So where does all this lead us to? So this leads us to the final stage, which we're going to see is a prerequisite, according to the Rambam specifically, of what's called kibbutz. Kibbutz, anyone know? Kibbutz, galiot. The gathering in of the Jewish people. And that seems to be the accepted notion, and even Moshe Rabbeinu spoke about this at the end of the Torah. He actually predicted, obviously, because the end of the Torah, the Torah itself is Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy, of course, that at the end of days, there will be an ingathering of all the exiles, right? All the Jewish people spread out through the entire world back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Yeah. Okay, there's a lot there, but that's a good summary of Jewish history in a nutshell. Yes?
Can you explain what number 4 means?
Hakol is everything. It's considered to be a combination of the first three. And the hardest, but the combination of the first three. But here's a very important point. We're going to spend a little bit of time on this as well. And that is, we'll spend quite a bit of time on this actually. And that is, this final one has another very interesting characteristic to it. And it goes like this. The first three had set times, whether you liked it or not. They may have had trouble figuring out when it starts and when it ends, because you know when things begin, you know when they end, right? So the 70 years, there are different opinions when it starts and ends. Achashverosh, people miscalculated. What's interesting about this last one is that we're going to see the prophet says, I will see inside later on, that we can control the end. There is a set time that this final exile can end, what's called Be'ito, in its time, says the prophet, but also one called Achishena. Achishena means that through our actions, and we're going to talk specifically what actions in particular, we are able to bring it closer. That is not true by any other exile. Be'ito, we'll do this inside later, just so you hear it outside now. Be'ito means at its time. That means there is a guaranteed end. Mashiach will come, there'll be Kibbutz Galios, we're all going to go back to Eretz Yisrael. There is a definite guaranteed end. The prophets brought it down, it's a given. What's weird is that we're able to do things, unlike the first three exiles, actions, specific actions, that can bring the end closer. And we'll look at Chazals later on, that'll show the various things. Mostly we're going to see there, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, between us and people, right? Mitzvah Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, that bring the end closer. Okay? Oh, by the way, another, not only, by the way, we'll see later on that the Gemara is also going to speak of just one Shabbos, and we'll all be free. Oh, I feel a song coming on. Just, okay, I'm not going to sing for you. Right? So that is also true. That we're going to see because Shabbat is keneged kol mitzvot kula. We're going to see inside later on. Shabbat is equal to all the other mitzvot, and therefore Shabbat is the power to, if every single Jew kept one Shabbat, actually, I think the Gemara actually says two, by the way. There's some opinion, I think, in the Gemara. We'll see later on. Maybe two Shabbats, then Mashiach will come. Bein David Ba, the descendant of King David, remember we said last week, one of the proofs that your Mashiach has got to be a direct descendant, will actually come as well. Okay? But we'll see mostly it's Bein Adam L'Chaveiro Mitzvot that brings the end closer. Right? Which explains why there's this movement, right, which has gained a lot of steam in our society in our days, and to do actions to bring Mashiach. What do I think? Bring, how do you bring Mashiach? So what that means is there's certain mitzvot and certain ways we act, which will, in the schut of that, the merit of that, will bring Mashiach. We're going to see it's not that simple. It could be that we get so bad, right, that if Mashiach doesn't come, we're going to get stuck. Right? So it's either we're going to be completely fantastic, right, or things are just so bad that Mashiach is going to come and like rescue us, kind of thing. Yeah.
So I have two questions. First of all, I'm a little bit confused in terms of like this information is like getting jumbled up in my head. Every angel, there's four angels, and every angel represents a point of exile.
Not one of exile, a period of time. Each angel, right, according to that midrash, represent a period of time that Yaakov's descendants would be exiled from the land of Israel. Now the Jews aren't in the land of Israel yet, so it couldn't start with him. Yeah, it couldn't start with him. It's when the Jewish people enter into Israel. So when we're in Egypt, we're in Israel yet, but we entered into Israel at a certain point, then the clock gets ticking, and we were told that we would be exiled from the land. Moshe Rabbein himself prophesied at the end of the Torah that we would be exiled from the land itself.
Okay, and then the Jacob's dream ladder, the thing that like his ladder represents the exile.
And it represents a number of things. It represents a number of things. I can't claim just for this. One of the, which Rashi mentions this. This is not out of left field. Rashi mentions one of the things it represents are the four galiut, the four exiles the Jewish people would go through. Because these are Yaakov's. So why did Yaakov have this dream? I just said, because Avraham Avinu's descendants didn't all go through it. And neither did Yitzchak's. Yaakov's became the Jewish people. Good?
Yeah.
So these exiles are four periods of history, of which we are in the fourth right now. That's the Roman one, which, interesting enough, is represented by, don't know which animal? The pig. The pig, the chazir. Interesting animal, the pig. Interesting animal. It's the only animal, I believe, that is not kosher because it has one siman as opposed to the other. Specifically, it has a split hoof, but it doesn't chew its cud. So on the outside, it looks kosher, not inside. So that represents, there's a whole Torah how it represents this exile of Edom, the final exile. There's a whole Torah on this, and that's the one we're living in. It looks real. We're in this Western world that looks real, smells or tastes real. It does taste real. But inside, it's kishkas, our trait. The only animal, by the way, the only animal that has that. The only animal that has that trait, by the way, interestingly enough, of the outside looking kosher, the inside not. Oh, I didn't say that. No, you do get reward. That is the reward. That is our time for receiving reward. It is a very rewarding time. Everyone wants Mashiach. Everyone wants Mashiach. I said the process. Oh, no. That means at that time itself was not for earning reward. It's just for receiving reward, because it can't be for earning reward. It's just for receiving, because you can't earn reward then, because the Yetzirah is lessened. So that time cannot be a time for earning reward. It must be for receiving reward. I don't know. I'll let you know when we get there. You shouldn't be depressed. The build-up could be scary, but you should be happy. You should be looking forward to it. You should be looking forward to it. A little bit nervous is okay. Yeah. Hello.
What would happen with the non-Jews? Like
the non-Jews carry on. They don't all that. There's this myth out there. I always see people saying that non-Jews all convert to Judaism. They carry on. Avodah Zorah will not exist, and all the other religions will disappear and dissipate. But they know, the whole world doesn't become Jewish. Okay, that's a lot of people buying wholesale. You know what I'm saying? I don't think we can maintain that. Someone's got to buy retail, right? I'm kidding. They carry on. There'll be non-Jews and Jews. According to Rambam, there'll be poor people, rich people. The world will carry on.
Do they also have to, earn the time of Mashiach? Or, is it just up on the...
So that gets a bit tricky. Do they earn the Mashiach? So there will be a grand judgment that happens in that time. And the Gemara goes into it in great detail. And they'll be actually tested... Right, the Gemara actually says, with the mitzvah of, anyone which mitzvah they're tested with? Sukkah. You say that? You got that? Very good. Tested with sukkah. Why that particular mitzvah? Is not for now, and how they react to that test, and actually, according to the Gemara, they actually failed that test, interestingly enough. But there will be a testing, but the world will carry on, and those who receive or deserve reward will get reward, those people and nations, and those who deserve punishment will receive their just deserts, what they've done to the Jewish people. Yeah.
Isn't it sad that when Mashiach comes, the truth of the Torah will be clear?
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're getting. That's what we say, the lesson of the Yetzirah, there'll be a great spiritual clarity. We're going back to Gan Eden. That's where I started.
Why would they not want to convert if the truth of the
Torah is clear? So the answer being, they don't need to convert, right? You can still connect to Hashem and have a connection to God without being Jewish. And you can right now. The other religions, though, the false religion will have to disappear. They will not exist, but they won't need to convert. Actually, when Mashiach comes, you're not allowed to convert anymore. We're going to see that inside. We're going to look at a lot of sources that you won't be allowed to convert. Just up to the time of Mashiach. And once Mashiach comes, there's a certain point. I'm not sure when that point begins and ends, but there's a certain point when the last comes to be allowed in, and then, boom, the gates are closed. So, it's pretty clear that you see a lot of people trying to convert now. A lot of nations, trying to, suddenly jump in and be Jewish. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, Amalia.
What's the significance of
So, which there's a few. It's Ramazan. These are when we spoke about Ramazim, things that are hinted at. So it's a hint, right? So the walls, the four sides of the dreidel, and the four exiles will go through. Also happens to be the gematria and miracle value of 358 in Mashiach. So it's a paprot la Torah. Yes.
The fourth
one is Edom. That's Hakol. That's everything. It's a combination of the first three. Yes, Meredith. No, there will be a judgment of the non-Jewish nations, and the Gemara tells us, a very famous Gemara, that the non-Jewish nations will say, hey, it's not fair. You gave the Jewish people mitzvahs, they had, so give us a mitzvah as well. And for some reason, the non-Jewish nations will be given the mitzvah of sukkah. Why that particular mitzvah is a whole discussion, not for now, we may do it later on. Something to speak about that mitzvah that speaks about emunah, faith, and according to the Gemara, they fail that test, which is hard to understand because they know the test is coming, but... In somehow, it may not literally be that, it may just be a metaphor, I'm not sure, but they do actually fail that test. Yeah. I don't know too much about it. I'm just telling you what it says. It seems to be the exile of Adam, of Per Adam, referring to Yishmael. It's the fifth one. I don't know. If you say to people the fifth exile, what are you talking about?
Why is it called the exile?
Because Yishmael is referred to as Per Adam, or a wild ass of a man. A wild person, but still Adam. A little bit of both. They're wild. They're extreme, but they're still Adam. They still have emunah.
You said what will happen to non-Jews. What did you say will happen?
There is a judgment at the end. Every nation is judged. Happens to be if I remember correctly, that the Yishmaelim, the Arab nations, will actually do teshuva first. And they learned that from Yishmael, because before Yishmael died, he actually did teshuva. So they say that the Yishmaelim, right, whoever they are today, most of the Arabs, will actually do teshuva. That seems to be the... It's hard to tell. These are like modern day, you know, extrapolations. But that's what they seem to say. Right? They will actually do teshuva first. Yeah.
Are we going to talk at all about the fact that some Chabadniks believe that Mashiach is there already?
I've never taught this course without Chabad coming up. We will not talk directly about it. But we'll talk about the various signs that are needed for Mashiach to come. So we're not going to make this into a Chabad class. Yeah.
Between the first and second temple?
No, that's what leads us to the destruction of the first temple. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first temple. So the period up to that point, the destruction was considered to be that end point up to that point, and because that didn't happen overnight, that took time, the destruction of the first temple itself was an exile. And then in Persia itself, in Madai, when we imperiled, that's considered to be the second exile.
So we did have the temple...
Yeah, absolutely. Even there as well. Right? We, in other words, they say what they destroyed was... physically a building, but Hashem Shechina was exiled before then, as in the case of the Romans as well. They came and just destroyed and ground down that which had been destroyed already. So the exile wasn't just the physical is a representation of it, it was also the spiritual exile that we ourselves caused through our Averos at the first exile and the last one, the first destruction and the final and the second destruction. You with me? So through the
spiritual, the first and the last are more spiritual.
Yeah, I mean they were physical as well, but right, we were in Israel exactly. Yeah, okay. They culminated in a physical exile as well, but they started beforehand. Especially the third one actually is purely that way. We were in Israel at that time. We were totally in Israel.
Yeah. So yeah. The one that was a physical exile is the second.
And this one and the fourth, yeah.
Yeah. And then
although Nebuchadnezzar did kick us out, that was part of the process.
Yeah.
He did destroy us and remove the Jewish people from the land.
Okay.
That's the whole Tisha B'Av thing. Yeah.
And then also, you were saying that through our actions we can end the current exile.
Yes.
Are you talking about the fourth or the fifth?
Fourth. The fifth, I can't really talk. I can just tell you what I read, and I have. If you want, I may bring it along to class. So you can see it inside. It's a wild piece, but the Chaim Vital speaks. He speaks. You know, it's he's a big source. You know, it's a Kabbalah thing. But it is interesting. I thought it was very interesting. I had to mention it. Yeah. I didn't bring it down. Yeah. We're not going to talk tests right now. Yes, we're just going to learn. Yeah.
At least know when that is.
Yeah. I already mentioned it. Yeah.
Can you please repeat what those words mean?
Yeah. Nafshi is the soul. Nebuchadnezzar went to the soul of the Jewish people. We have Gufani is the physical. The Guf is the physical, the body. That's what they wanted. Sichli is the mind, the Seichel. And then Hakol, the final one is a combination. That means we are in exile spiritually, physically, and intellectually. That's the final exile of Edom. That's seemingly what the rabbis say. Good? Sechel, for mind. Intellectual. That's what they wanted to intellectualize us. Enlighten us. So we light the lights of the mirror to enlighten them. They fight like with like. They wanted to spiritually get us, so we light candles. Right? And we eat donuts as well, because, you know, we Jews have to eat. Page 35. I thought we were doing a lot today. You're leaving here wiser. Let's look at the Maral. The Maral of Prague speaks about this final chapter of Jewish history as well. Okay? And the Gemara says that actually Jewish history itself is divided up in another way, into six, or world history, into 6,000 years. 2,000, 2,000, 2,000. 2,000 years of void. This is the Gemara, actually. 2,000 years of void. You'll see it inside in a second. 2,000 years of void up to Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu for 2,000 years when his life begins. 2,000 years are the times of Torah. And the final 2,000 years are referred to as the times of Mashiach, which are the leading through to the days of Mashiach. So all world history follows 6,000 years. Where are we right now, by the way? 5773. That means the world as a maximum can, as it is, can only last 6,000 years, which we mentioned already, if you remember, is hinted at in the first pasuk of the Torah, because remember, every beginning has to have the end in it as well, and there are six alephs in the first pasuk of the Torah. And the word aleph also spells aleph, 1,000. So the guarantee is, and some commentators say, I believe the Ramban says this, I believe, that the guarantee is by the 6,000th is the absolute guarantee. That's the be'ito. That's the max. That is the max. Okay? But we still have the powers, we'll see, the Prophet says, to Achishana, to bring it closer, which we should be striving for.
Six
alephs in the first pasuk of the Torah. And aleph, lamed fei, also spells aleph, which means 1,000. So encoded in the first pasuk of the Torah is the fact the world will exist for a maximum of 6,000 years. As is. Doesn't mean it's going to explode and disappear at the end. I'm just, you know, that means that by that point Mashiach has to come and the world will change. I think, though, it's going to happen earlier than that. I'm going to hazard a guess. Yeah. In the first pasuk of the Torah, Bereishit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim v'et ha-aretz, there are six alephs. That is a hint to six elephs, which are 6,000. Aleph also spells aleph, which means 1,000. Yes, Nancy.
So, by the 6,000th year, Mashiach will be
guaranteed.
After
that point, that's when it begins, which corresponds to the 6 days of the week as we enter into Shabbat. And we'll see about that as well in future classes as well. It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. As a guarantee, the 6,000th. Yes. Yes, of Messianic, the Messianic timeline, Shabbat. Enter into the 7th. Just like Friday is the 6th day, and then we enter into Shabbat, which is the 7th. So, too, because you're moving into the 7th. It could be before, absolutely. It could be before, absolutely. It could be before. Yes, 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 absolutely. It can start earlier. We have the power to TiVo the movie back, and to begin. Not that I have TV, I'm just telling you, not that I have TV, but you can bring it back. And start it earlier. We have that chance to reboot. Yeah.
Can you repeat each 2,000?
So the first 2,000 are Tohu Vohu, was complete void. Avraham Avinu turns up around the 2,000th, 1948, I believe. Avraham Avinu turns up. That begins the next 2,000, which is called the 2,000 of Torah, I believe, and wisdom. And then the final 2,000 is Mashiach. Okay? So let's look at the Maharal inside. Hello. A lot of questions today. This is great. Yeah, leading up. They're called the 2,000 years of Mashiach, leading up to Mashiach. Yeah. Bigger what? Yeah, we're going to talk about war a little bit later on. Yeah, we're going to talk about that as well. The prophet does speak about that. By the way, no negative prophecy has to come true. That's a general rule, by the way. And some people say it's really happened already, but it does talk about a war, as we'll see later on, of Gog and Magog. Gog and Magog. Right? The prophets do speak about that, so we'll discuss that a little bit later. Yes. There's a lot going on, isn't there? I told you it's exciting. Yes.
So, biological people say the world is like millions of years old, right?
Yeah.
So people, like Jews, kind of explain that as like maybe...
Okay, so I can't... That's a whole different discussion. I can't go into that now because of how old the world is. What we're going to do is we're going to count...
There's supposedly 6,000 years, but like, how do we know
they're human years? Okay, they are very, very good. They are absolute human years, and whichever way you look at it, we're going to start it from Adam Rishon, the first time a neshama was put inside a human. So you can look at it any way you want, but they are absolute years as we understand them for 6,000. Now, there's a difference of opinion when that first year began. Okay, there we look into. There's a lot of writings on that in literature today. Is that really mankind? Is it the beginning of mankind? Is it the first time Adam Rishon, a soul, was put inside Adam Rishon? The Gemara in Chagiga says there were 960 worlds before this one. Okay, so there was some action going on beforehand. We're not sure exactly. I actually wrote an essay on this recently. Worlds before this one, that were built and destroyed before this one. I don't know what that means. There's a lot of Kabbalah on that. I actually called a good friend of mine who translated the art scroll Gemara and wrote the notes on it. And we held a discussion, looked at other sources, a lot on it. But what we're talking for this class is 6,000 years as we understand, 365 days in each year. That's what we're talking about. Absolutely 100, 1,000%. Up to that point, when that begins, we get discussions. Yes? What Jewish year are we in? Anyone know what year are we in now? What do we start, Rosh Hashanah? 5773. That's what we are today.
So there's only like 300 years left?
Less than that, yeah. Less than that, yeah. Yeah, less than that. exciting, right? It's like we're in an exciting part of history. I think we're even earlier, by the way. I think we're getting close, you know.
Wait, but like, what if it doesn't?
By the way, you know that it happened with. But there's other similarities with this one. Since this, I think it's like let's do some wild stuff today. Since this last one over here is a combination of all three, there are aspects of the other three that correspond over here. They say just there's a whole connection between the Purim story and the redemption, and even the Rambam says that Purim has a certain microcosm of the messianic years as well. We're going to see some connection between the Purim story and the coming Mashiach. The way it happened, it's a complete quick reversal. Yep, and all Nahafchu turns around quickly. They say it's also reminiscent of the coming of Mashiach. It's going to be a bit quick turn. Right, that's going to happen at the end of days as well. There's a whole discussion with that as well, and laughter. We'll discuss that another time. And the joy of Purim reproduces itself in the times of Mashiach. Okay, there's another correspondence with the also Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt. We were redeemed from Mitzrayim, so too we get redeemed at the end of days, because Jewish history revolves around that as well. And just as the Jewish people were at a certain point, they were so low that we had to get taken out early, it could be that that happens to us as well. There's a lot of other connections that go through. But just give these are the main points I'm giving you. Yeah? Nothing wild. This is standard Judaism of it. Nothing wild and weird. I mean, that one's a little bit, but... Okay. Let's look at the Maharal inside. Says the Maharal Netzach Yisrael, the last 2,000 years of the 6,000 years of history are Yemosa Mashiach. Okay. And he says, Pirush, we'll do it in English, Pirush Azman Acharon Hum Yuchal Yemos Mashiach. This means that toward the end of time is the most appropriate time for Mashiach to come. That means Mashiach could have turned up any time in the 2,000 years. Okay, the final 2,000 years are Ra'ui LeMashiach. That's what it means. Yeah? And for the Messianic era to Ki Azman Acharon Hu Ashleim, because those final years is the completion of it. In other words, anything which happens at the end of the process is the completion and perfection of that process. Therefore, he says, the end of time is designated for Melech HaMashiach. For he will bring, the job of Mashiach we're going to see, is to complete all of Jewish history. The time itself, but the person as well, is there to like sum up all of history. It's Hakol. He's going to come and sum up the whole thing and complete it. It's all going to come full circle. We're all going to unite, he says, and the whole world will be shalem. Okay? And that's why it's appropriate that Mashiach will come at the end of history, because it's like the culmination of it all. Okay? Bottom page 35. Let's look at the Rambam, just so we don't think that these are wild ideas, although some of you may be learning it for the first time. And the Rambam lists for us the Yud Gimel Ikrim, the 13 principles of faith. 13 principles of faith of the Jewish people. And principle number 12, its own principle of the Ani Ma'amin, Be'emuna Shalema, with the complete faith we need to have, Be'viat HaMashiach, the Mashiach is going to come. That's the principle of our faith. Okay? Ve'af Alpi, and even though, She'yitma'meya, that he tarries, which is a fancy way of saying he has not come yet. Im kol zeh achakei loa, a person has to anticipate the coming of Mashiach. B'chol yom shiavo, that is going to come. That doesn't mean we have to stand every day and like, where's Mashiach? There has to be a certain understanding that Mashiach could come any day. The Mashiach could come. We have to anticipate every day. And one of the questions the Gemara tells us, I believe in Shabbat, if I remember correctly, when a person leaves this world was, did you anticipate the coming of Mashiach? One of the questions the neshama of a person is asked is, did you anticipate it? That's the Gemara says. Okay, was it part of your waiting process? Right? Was it part of your reality? Right? And that's why many people have the custom at the end of davening to read through the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam, and to be able to say that by just reading the words, the Ani Ma'amins. If you look at the end of Shacharis, it actually has the list of 13 things, and boop, they read through it, and the reason they do is that it's part of their daily reality, should we say. Okay. Let's look at the Rambam, page 36, turn over. The Rambam is really one of the main sources, and the one who paskins la halacha, right? So the Rambam is really the one that we kind of turn to understand, you know, I mean, we turn to other sources as well, of course, we see many of them, even the Mishnah speaks about it, as we'll see, But the Rambam really has really laid it out as Jewish law as to what's expected of us in terms of Mashiach. Says the Rambam, a person to believe Mashiach will be better and greater than more than all the other malachim there have been. Okay? Greater than all the other kings that have been, and will be a prophet, a Navi, greater than all other prophets except for Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom, he says. Okay? And he says, one who doubts this, umishi stapek bo, on its matetz law, it's low in their appreciation of it, or denies it, it's as though they're denying all of the Torah. This is big stuff. This belief of Mashiach coming is so central, if you believe it, it's as though you're kivyachol throwing out all the Torah. That's why there are 13 principles of faith, and not 12. Okay? And that's the Rambam Hilchot Malachim. This is the laws of kings, because remember, Mashiach's going to be a king. Chapter 11, verse 1. V'chol mi she'enu ma'amin bo, whoever does not believe in it, or mi she'enu mechake leviyato, who doesn't anticipate the Mashiach's coming, lo b'shan neviim bilvad hu kofeh, ele b'toru Moshe Rabbeinu. He's not just denying one or two prophets, he's denying the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the entire Torah, because Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was the entire Torah. Okay? And the rabbis even put it into the Amida. One of the brachot, one of the blessings of the Shimon Esrei, 18 blessings, is Et, I mean, you probably read it and don't know what you're talking about. Right? Maybe we just read it and don't know what they're speaking about. Et Tzemach David Avdacha Behiru Tasmiach. We ask the descendants of Ben David, King David, to blossom. Tzemach, Tzmikut, to blossom. Right? Why that metaphor is used is interesting, but it's a slow, gradual process. Okay? Slow, gradual process. And we ask Hashem, the Karno, Karen, his power, the horn, but the power, Tarum B'Shua Secha, should come through redemption, Ki Lishua Tafini Kol Yom, because we ask Hashem for every day for to be redeemed, Baruch Atah Hashem, Masmiach Keren Yeshua, who causes the pride of the salvation, of the Keren of the power, Yeshua of his salvation to come forward. That's actually a prayer for Mashiach, in case you're wondering. Not a prayer for David HaMelech. Okay? So it's worth thinking that when you say it. And even in Kaddish, in the Edut HaMizrach, the Sephardi Kaddish and the Sfarad, which are very similar. You know that Sephardi and Sfarad are very similar. Yep, I believe because they both stem from the Arizal, which is why they have the Sfaradim and Nusach Sfarad, which are pretty much what Hasidim follow, have the same Kaddish, same Kedusha, same Tachlon, many, many similar aspects. They both come from Kabbalah, by the way. And in the Kaddish, it says, Yitgadal, Yitgashmei Rabbah, there's that word again. So part of the Kaddish itself has encoded in it this prayer that Mashiach will come. Okay? And Rav Sadia Gaon, from the Gaonim, that's before the Rishonim, I brought it down for you to see it in Hebrew, and he says this idea of Mashiach coming is a given. Right? Although there have been a few false starts through Jewish history, Shoresh Hagulu Chaya B'Fnim Rabim. There's many, many problems. There's many reasons we'll see the coming of. We can see the validity of the coming of Mashiach. And he says, first of all, Moshe Rabbeinu told us we will be coming back at the end of days. Okay, that's number one. Okay? Next, we see that Isaiah the prophet, as we're going to see inside, talks about Yeshayahu, talks about Mashiach's future arrival, and other prophets as well. And finally he says, and also we believe that God is just and will do no wrong. Right? Shu tzadik loyol. Right? That means it doesn't make sense the world can carry on with all the pain and difficulty. This is it. There's got to be an end point. It's God. We have to be able to turn back at some point and make sense of this crazy world we've been living in. So he says even logic, if you look at the world, and by the way, it's interesting, even the non-Jewish nations to this day seem to be looking at the world and saying that there's got to be an end. Right? There's this feeling, even among the Ummah Sa'ulam, the other nations of the world, right? The Christians, they're obsessed with the whole rapture. Yep, and the Muslims are waiting for the Mahdi. You know? Everyone's like, that's like the most the world is anticipating something's going on. See, it's all just speeding up too quickly. And by the way, that's a very good thing, of course. And actually, according to the Rambam belief, that's one of the reasons these other religions have these messiahs and these beliefs, so that when the real Mashiach comes, they'll have a dimion, they'll have actually a vision, and be able to accept the idea of one leader. Yeah, they'll have it's all for a reason. There is no coincidence to this. Yeah, so that's Rav Sadia Gaon, as you see inside. He says it doesn't make sense. Lo yitaken shiyeh ein tachlit. It can't be. There's no ending. It's got to be. We've got to be going somewhere. I mean, in our generation, we feel it a lot more. Yeah.
How are the miracles performed by Moshe
shown? Not the miracles. He's talking about the nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of days. Right, more leading. We spoke about the coming back, because that final, that's in the final book of the Torah, Devarim. At the end, before he dies, he laid down clues. By the way, so did Yaakov. Right, there are various people who did know the end date. There are various people who did know the end date, knew it. Yaakov was one, was going to reveal it, and Rashi says in Parshas Vayechi that Sosom Menu, it was blocked from him. He was going to tell his kids. It was going to pass down, but Hashem didn't want that to happen. So, at the end of Yaakov, before he died, he's blessing his children, he's about to reveal the end date, and then it was blocked from him, and he wasn't permitted to reveal that.
Why not?
That's a good question. Why are we not told the end of days? That's a good question. We're going to come to that another time. I want to discuss that, of why it's hidden from us. We're going to see that there's a few answers to this. The one which I always like to give is that if you know when it's coming,
you're not going
to anticipate it, and you'll do tshuva right before Mashiach comes, and you're going to be a bum your entire life. And not you. I mean, just saying, in general, people will be. The other one is you get more of a geschmack, which is Yiddish for you get more of enjoyment. It's like a joke. Literally, like a joke. A joke, the punchline's at the end. And the joke and the punchline always comes and reveals what everything was happening, or the end of a play, or the last page of a book. You don't read the last page, you don't watch the end of the movie, right, and then work backwards. Because you want to have the oomph, right? So that's why, as Yemalech Tzchok Pinu, at the end of days, it will all be revealed, and there'll be a great laugh that will come from the Jewish people. That's what David HaMelech was hinting at as well when he said that, right, in the Sheher Malot. As Yemalech Tzchok Pinu. Okay. Next class, we are going to review this pre-Messianic era, and we will begin more about the individual who the actual Mashiach is. If you don't mind, though, just before you leave, handing out these sheets, this is some homework for you to read through the pre-Messianic era. Thank you so much. The pre-Messianic era section of these sheets. This is Rav Aryeh Kaplan, who does a great summary of what we just learned and adds some juicy points for us. So please read those sheets for next class. Yes. Please read the first part, the pre-Messianic era, the first part, and then we'll do the Messianic era itself. We'll read at a future point, but you expect to read the first part of that.